Hello, welcome back. It's cool, two in about as many weeks, episode wise. So it's episode 10. I'm Binary Dogs. And we are back with an unsuspecting episode for you. This has come out of nowhere. It's a bit of a surprise. So I'll quickly give you an introduction to everybody that's here. So we've got Mike P again. Say hello, Mike.
Hello, hello.
We've got Chris Nehemiah Dyer. Say hello, Chris.
Hey, gang.
And we've got Alex Vinegrink White. Your name always gets me every time, Alex. It's just too many syllables. Say hello.
Hello. It's only a matter of time before I change my username to Alex.
Yes, that would be appreciated. And we've got Don, also known as Echo. Say hello,
hey,
Don.
Hey.
Cool. So, impromptu one, a little bit for us. So we had a secret trip away last weekend. Nominally to say happy birthday to Mike, but also somewhat conveniently, Mike was having his surprise and unknown to him birthday celebrations in Nottingham, which was also hosting a CO run by the lovely Matt, with all the new cards and lots of lovely people. So we kept it on the sly. Mike didn't know, but we all spent a week testing and playing and trying to keep it a secret so that we could go and play. But we did all right, didn't we? I think we did generally.
Crucially,
okay.
Nobody at the tournament knew either, but I promise you that's because we were trying to surprise Mike, not because we were trying to shark a CO.
When I turned up partway through the day just to come and watch and see how you guys were all doing, I got several complaints from people who said, I brought fun decks. What the hell? What's happened?
Apologies to everyone.
I did my best to warn people. I signed up on Always Be Running for the tournament on the Friday night, so after Mike knew what was going on, but before the CO itself, I was like, it's okay, it's public now, I can say I'm going. Apparently that's not enough notice, and also I think it was only me from our group. Yeah. So.
And you're local anyway, so...
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah, to the people not especially any Nottingham locals, we do apologise for essentially raiding your local CO, but you've got a lovely store, and you had a lovely CO with lots and lots of people, and you had the new cards, and it was a really fun day. Unfortunately, Mike couldn't play. He had other things to do on his birthday celebration weekend, but the rest of us did get to play. And also Chris Ferg, who's not with us tonight, and Russ all joined us. And I think we ended up six of the top eight at the end of the day. So a good day. A very good day. But who wants to talk about their decks or the day or the weekend? Where do you want to start? Warhammer World?
Let's start with our complete uncertainty about what any of us should play.
I think, well, we were pretty happy with Runner Side.
Yeah. So most of you ended up on Sable. As is our way, we just ripped off all the lists we could find from APAC that looked good, changed one or two cards and then claimed them as our own. But Runner seemed way up in all our test games when we were playing games in the house in advance. We just kept winning Runner game after Runner game, and they're all really similar, where you just control the board for a while, build up your board state, just kind of stop the corp doing too much without overcommitting to interacting with them, then you win an RN, and that just kept happening.
Yeah, and there were no obvious corp answers to that either. When we had five different corps, I think, just with this in the house that weekend, we were trying.
And that seemed like the consensus problem between all of them, right? Like, I mean, I, as it wasn't actively testing for it, but in all the conversations we had, it kept being like, oh, we have this sort of new exciting corp, it seems quite fun. Oh, and I played against one of you and just got smashed on R&D by a Hermes deep dive. Okay, this deck sucks. Next deck.
Yeah, basically everybody has this problem with their agenda suite is at best mediocre. The sort of MBN agenda suites are all right and you don't hate them. Every other corp that you...
Yeah, and I think that goes to show when... Yeah, go on, Chris. Okay.
Even the MBN one is only okay. You often don't really want to score baloners a lot of the time. You're obligated to play at least one or two agendas that you don't really want to score. And that's a pattern across all the co-ops that you have these agendas in your deck that the Run of Steel you don't want to score. If you do score, it's out of protest, and you're taking both a negative tempo hit and inevitably a Hermes bounce, which is like big shaping factor of this run. And you have to respect that every score that you make, you're going to...
I mean, I'd also say, just while talking about, I don't really think we did much testing for Ob in this kind of conversation, right? Outfit, yes, and various MBN and HP decks, not so much Jinteki either.
We'd looked at Ob very early on in cycle around when we recorded the set testing, but I think we'd all kind of put it down after we started to find these R-plus decks and after we got particularly obsessed with trying to find the right Asa list through several iterations. So, no, you're right, that's probably a bit of a gap, which, I mean, I think a lot of what we're saying here is still true for the Ob lists, but, like, we can't really say that authority.
The Ob list notably doesn't have to play a 5-3, and also what corpse in Advance of Heroes, it's virtually the only game that doesn't have to play a...
I think how good Bologna is compared to all the other factions, 5-3 options did really stand out, though, when we did that testing, right?
Yeah.
Even the other defensive ones like Ikawa or SDS or the new Fuji,
especially
not really the same.
Ties into what you actually want to be doing. Like, all of the power in MBN now is really tied into Oppo research and trying to either, like, immediately murder the runner or tempo them out in some way, and Bologna tees up the 3-threat version of that and immediately gives you the Econ advantage. Like, both when you score it, it's fine, because it keeps you in the money race, and if they steal it, it's fine. Whereas nothing you're doing HB really cares about the one click on Ikawa. And, like, I mean, you kind of want to do some rig shooting stuff in some of these Wayland decks, but, like, not really what you want to be doing. You just want to be fast advancing Atlases. Like, that's what you want to be doing in Wayland. And this 5-3 is just, like, it doesn't sort of interact with that.
At least you can score a Bologna.
Yeah, and I think that's why five of us ended up with on MBN decks. Just because it was tempo positive to, or at least tempo neutral to score the Bologna. It didn't feel too bad compared to everything else.
Yeah, what you're really looking for in Corp is a deck that has the ability to score gen. And MBN has this kind of lockout state with Starlit Knight at the end, where if you can just keep draining their money, giving them tags with all very efficient local, then and keep playing Oppish, then late in the game, if you can get to the point with a bunch of tags, Starlit Knight. And that was kind of the most compelling way we found of not losing Corp games consistently.
Yeah, I think this is really key because, yeah, like we said, a lot of the time, if your MBN game plan is working, the runner is quite poor. And that applies whether or not they're trashing a bunch of assets, clearing tags, maybe preferably both, or just have been hit by it. And in those cases, Bologna does protect itself. It's not just a liability on Central. With HB, with these sort of Stegadon decks, even if you make all their ice strength zero and you can res four Makuri as many times as you want, Managarm is only protecting one remote. So if they can still trick into your Central, they can. Jinteki isn't doing enough net damage that the two net John Fuji asset retrieval is much of a threat, so they can still steal it. And because of stuff like Hermes and Boomerang, even if a good card with an SDS. So Bologna also has synergy with the MBN game plan in a way everybody else's 5-3s don't.
So who had the best MBN deck?
I think Don did.
Yeah, so do I.
Okay.
Sorry, Alex.
Cool.
R.I.P.
That feels alright to me.
So there's two types of MBN deck, right? They're both, and they're quite similar. One is playing a lot of assets. You're using Oppo research and then constant drift, the threat of these assets doing something to you, whether Bladder Warts, Cascadia. But you're not really, you don't play a lot of ice, you're just building to overwhelm. The other one's more tempo orientated, and that you've got one remote, you're putting a bunch of stuff in it. Occasionally, the runner steals an agenda, but they're both just making you go really low on credits somehow, and then using the fact that you can't keep clearing tags, quick score. Wide R plus one we were playing before that came out of APAC, I think, is a bit more vulnerable, a bit fragile, and kind of you can play around it quite competently if you know what you don't need to trash and what you do need to trash, and the secrets you don't need to trash very much. Whereas the tempo one, interact more, because if you don't interact with it, it crashes out of a remote. I also think it's better to have R plus than this, but there's not a huge...
Yeah, I think if you're talking about assets versus aggressively scoring agenda, a key way is that Oppo becomes really potent once threat 3 is live. But against a lot of these asset decks, you can keep the game off threat 3 for a while, because you just spend all your time trashing their assets. They don't really want to push agendas because they... and the oppos just end up looking like kind of a liability, at least with tempo sort of R plus or decks that want to score aggressively. If either player scores a Bologna, which you are both looking to do, oppo research is online and it's actually going to be a good. So that's one of the reasons I think I prefer these.
Should we talk a bit more about specifics of what I was playing then? Because it's tweaked a bit from one of the APAC lists. For those of you who paid attention to the APAC list, so that was a deck called Sparrow Brawler that QTM brought, and I basically, along with other people from our testing group, just made some tweaks. So we've gone up to 3 Crypto Crash and only 1 Oracle Think Tank, which to me feels like a really, really good change. You free up an extra slot for doing other things, but also that 1 Oracle Think Tank, so many games I've just thrown it away because my opponent's on 5 points or some other number of points, and I know that it doesn't even matter if I never shuffle it back in, because with the agenda suite it's playing, going from 5 to 6 doesn't do anything to change what's needed to win the game, so that's pretty good. And then, apart from that, really we just messed around a bit with the econ and tag punishment, so we put Shipment from Vlad in, which was not in the original list, because that's actually a way to score a Bologna if you manage to get tags on a runner, and cut the market forces. Started playing Hedge Fund. one of the rare 3 times Hedge Fund decks in this meta, it seems. And who knows, maybe it shouldn't even be on that. Maybe it should be on 2 and 3 Your Digital Lives, but it's 3 Hedge Fund, 2 Your Digital Life, and not playing Market Forces anymore, which just felt like, in the games where the runner goes tag me, Market Forces could feel pretty big, I would say, in testing. But you're kind of winning those games anyway. I don't think you need to drain 15 credits to win that game. You just make them run into Starlit Knights on the centrals and score out with Shipment from Vlad. So just having consistent econ to keep your early game going and push Crypto Crash behind some ice early on felt a lot better to me than waiting for a runner to get into that situation. I think that's kind of a summary. It really wasn't a lot of huge changes. If you want to go look at the list, I published it under the name Vegan Nachos on NetrunnerDB. So you can see right up there. But
yeah, and I think like shipmenting out Crypto Crash is kind of just like Market Forces also wins you the game, right? Exactly. Like, I guess it's sort of all the
pretty
upside
nice.
And 2 points.
Imagine if Market Forces gave you 2 points, huh?
Yeah, sick.
I do agree that the tag punishment these days doesn't really do very much. And if the runner sits around on one tag, the best you've got is the case, which most runners are quite resilient to because they're building with Rig Shooter in mind, and they've all got a ton of ways their primary breakers now, that's boomerangs or so if they sit on one tag and you just run and you don't really do a lot to them, and the best you can really do is hope that they can't, because they can't clear one tag, they're going to take more tags in the future. It's a very different kind of play pattern to MBN tagging decks.
Yeah, and one of the things that does give these MBN decks some potency is at least if they go tag me, you can res a Starlit Knight. It's like a Genesis Cycle ass looking piece of ice, but it is kind of the glue that holds a lot of these MBN decks together, because it's a face check early and it's a threat late. But it's you're not getting excited about Starlit Knight, but it's surprisingly good.
Right? I'm very excited about Starlit Knight, actually.
Yeah, I'm quite excited. I could spend all this.
Well, we all miss Spin Cycle, but that's another.
But the MBN, as well as the Genesis Sweep being good, the MBN Ice is really quite annoying. Because Ping is obviously, especially in R+, Ping is a tempo positive for the Corp, albeit doesn't do a lot. Virtual Service Agent is way better than it looked initially, because almost all runners are leaning on non traditional breakers to get into service early, and at that point Virtual Agent is horrendously tacked. And Starlit Knight has both a face check and a really, really high end game lockout potential if your game.
Yeah, the MBN Ice is definitely worth discussing, because to me is that it's the MBN Ice is not a game plan, and really there aren't many decks for whom Ice is a game plan at this point in the meta, but it's good mid-range ice, it's a reasonably costed, and it taxes the runner enough for you to be able to enact your plan if you have one. So like F2P felt surprisingly good for me in the tournament, even on mind-blowing card. And yeah, Virtual Service Agent a lot better than it. And Starlit Knight is just about good enough. So you've got all these pieces of ice that you're not excited about, but they do the job and they let you kind of get on with what you're...
Yeah, I think it might also have been like our... I mean, I feel like we're always going to find things that we were wrong about in assessment, but one of the things I was absolutely convinced about looking at these cards was that one of NBN's biggest problems was they'd lost loads of good ice and they'd gained loads of mediocre ice, but it seems like sort of I mean, I still think that's kind of true. I think Sandpike is a better card than like some of these things. I think Archangel would be really good in some of these decks, but... Oh, and obviously IP Block would be incredible because everyone is a Hammerhead. But, sort of, like, the Ice is better than expected, and the loss of the Conspiracy Breakers, the loss of Buckgarter, there's some shift in the Runham, means that actually it's still just fine. As you say, the new suite is pretty good and nice and synergistic and, like, works for the things you want, even if it doesn't do everything. Also, it's not incredible, but it's fine.
Yeah, I was going to say that Virtual Service Agent, to me, I mean, compared to Turnpike, compared to IP Block, there's a few different two-cost ice from the past, but it seems like... But if you're treating it as similar to IP Block for Amakua, it does in some way have a better face check when they don't have an AI installed, right? Because you're forcing the tag, whereas IP Block, they could pay through the trace, right?
Yeah, so, it hits everything. It's not just... Like, IP Block was sick Amakua tech, but it didn't do anything to Botulus or Boomerang or Bankar or just face checking through it, and this does.
Exactly,
IP Block turned Amakua into a liability, such that you consider trashing it. Virtual Service Agents didn't do right. If they find their decoder, they can keep Kura in play, and sure, that does change things a bit.
Yeah. That changes things a bit. I'm saying that the face check value is good enough that pre-Amakua, it actually works really well. So,
And that's the case for the entire suite. I think the best thing about the suite, especially if you're playing against R+, almost any run unres dice will be a bad tempo exchange for the run. Apart from like the magnets that's saying all the other ice is really bad the first time.
I mean, wraparound also fine to bounce off, but wraparound very annoying when people are relying on Turtle to get them through things.
Yeah, and I think if we, well, I guess there is a tournament next, it feels like NBN is the faction that we are happiest with.
I certainly think that might shift as people get used to the play patterns. I got a lot of mileage at the tournament from people still not adjusting to how the new cards work, maybe. Oppo Research is the most obvious. So now I think something you should really think twice about is trashing Rashida, for example. Obviously, it's been a must trash for most of its life. But a lot of the time, the Rashida is not going to do that much for them, really. Like, it might fill their hand with more agendas. It might not give them the three credits is a lot, but it's not enough to res, like, a Starlet Knight. So it might not give them enough tempo, whereas getting hit with an Oppo may... You might not want to hippo ice sometimes just because of Oppo. And then you probably want to wait and trash things the turn you steal other things to make the, to sort of, it's not changing the fate of a million games, but you should really think twice about whether you can, because even good cards like Rashida,
I think the biggest lesson we took as runner, using yourself, how I lose game a lot, because you should be winning most games point in the mid game where, and one of those mistakes you can make, like you say, is to open up an Oppo that, especially when you haven't stolen an agenda, you are no further ahead in the game. But if you just trash something at the top of the deck, suddenly putting yourself behind.
Yeah, I think Chris's point is really key there. You lose. We've all seen plenty of games where the corp gets to enact its game plan, like the Enhanced Securities, or they score a Stegodon and start doing a derez, and then they lose anyway, because at some point the runner goes all out, runs a bunch of stuff because the corp has taken a while to find 7 points. So give the corp easy wins and you'll be there eventually.
I think I've seen more games in the last couple of weeks than I have ever seen before where the runner has stolen 7 points in one turn. Like, just so many games have come down to the runner sort of actively avoiding agendas for the whole game. Or not avoiding agendas, but like just not bothering running centrals because all they're doing is managing the corpse game plan in the remote. And then finding one agenda in archives and going, okay, I'm going to deep dive for two cards. Oh, I've won the game now.
Yeah.
And so many games which sort of on the face of it look like, oh, this is terrible. It's just over. Okay.
Yeah, I think exactly. If you watch games between good players, and that's either APAC or Cascadia, the runner always looks down in the mid-game because they aren't over... That means that if you are feeling down, don't panic, don't try and overextend or press or try to do anything desperate. You have all the time to turn that feeling of being slightly down to... It's usually a pretty kind, quite a lot of the time.
Yeah, that is such a huge, important lesson to learn from this, definitely. I would say I felt down in most of my runner games over the weekend, and they all ended up as wins. You just have to take it slow, and just the simple fact of sometimes you can just be like, the best thing for me to do here is maybe just draw a couple, click and install Hermes, and then the corp reaction is quite visceral at times because they want to go and score, but now they've realised they have to actually allow for the fact that you're going to bounce something, and now they want to slow down, they maybe want to put another piece of ice on, and they just don't have the time, because the longer the game goes on, the more chance you've got of finding your deep dive and or whatever your multi-axis is, and then going ahead and winning.
I'll also say that I think Hermes changes the math on sort of how the game plays when the corp is at game point, right? Sort of it used to be that if a corpse got to 5 and the runner's just dawdled around and done nothing and has 1 or 0 points, the corpse can jam in the remote, assuming they've got an okay remote, and the runner can't just go and steal 6 points off the top of R&D and win the game, you know, before the corpse does. But now that Hermes exists, the runner doesn't have to do that. What they have to do is find one agenda, bounce that scoring plan in the remote back to hand, and now, you know, the race is reset. There's no reason for them to worry. So I think that's also a factor, right? You can hang out a bit more as the runner, build your game plan up, and then when the corpse getting ahead, you can actually just set them back every turn, just time walk them while stealing their agendas. So even if you don't steal 7 in one turn, you're still not going to lose the game.
I think that's a big tip.
It's almost better to charge your multi-access, like wake access, in the...
Yeah, I've had JNet games where I've charged Wake Implant up to like 7 or 8 counters and said, well, these are for later. These are for when I want to get a Hermes trigger, when I think there's a good chance to run R&D. For now, I'm just going to poke HQ because it's my mark and draw some cards and get some money.
Or when R&D becomes dense, because a lot of these corps have filtering, a lot of draw, like federal fundraising has been played a lot, and almost all of these very small R&Ds by the mid to end game that have a lot of agenda. And at that point, your multi is really, really efficient.
Yeah, it's really common to play a deep dive and see more agendas than you can physically steal.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Feels bad when you don't.
Yeah, I think one thing that it's worth people taking away quickly is if you really need to win or you need to get a Hermes bounce, it's worth, if you're playing against an MBA and they've been triggering like federal fundraising, relating, is that the right one that manipulates R&D, or am I getting my R&D manipulated?
That's right.
Yeah. Been federal stacks the top couple of cards, but federal plus DBS lets them tuck cards to the bottom really efficiently.
It's the one that sounds like it should make money is the one that manipulates R&D.
Right? Yeah, right.
If they've had that going in DBS, a lot of the time what you want to do is find a spin doctor to run such that they shuffle the deck and then you deep dive and it's probably chopped against MBM.
Yeah. Chris, did you want to touch on your Astra deck a little bit before we move on?
I played Astra out of stubbornness, and because I have a I Love Wage Worker t-shirt now that I have to wear at all events. it's not as solid as MBN. The difference is that your agenda suite, as we already touched on, is much worse. So it does feel more fragile to me, but it does feel like it's something more powerful than the MBN decks are, as long as you can get to that point in the game. And that isn't easy. You have to draw and score a Stegadon. But when you do, the kind of transformative effect of a Stegadon score on board on the runner is very, very powerful, because now all your ice is constantly looking like it's a strength 8 gatekeeper. Any upgrade and boats looks like it could be a Managarm. You can put a Managarm on R&D, and then the Managarm 4 bookie combo is extremely powerful. If you can get to that mid-game point, I found that it has more control over the runner's game than, because you're almost paralysing the mushrooms they've got. Again, I do think if the runner learns to play against it and kind of learns that these Stegadon flip and resin ice isn't probably as bad as it looks a lot of the time, and obviously they can't all be gatekeepers, then it will probably lose a little bit. But I found that it was one of the harder decks for runners to play against.
Chris, not to accuse you of playing a prison deck, but
I will say... It's not a prison deck. It's got 11 agendas.
Not. It's, yeah, I mean... I think if you don't know how to play against it, it is kind of miserable to play against once a Stegadon's been scored. Again, the first couple of times I played against it, I was quite bewildered by what options I was meant to be taking. I'm sure it does have effective runner game plans against it. It's just
there are practicing lines. Like, the most important one is that Stegadon specifies the ice has to be on a different server that you derez, which means that if you are... And the corp will often have a lot of derezed ice. That if you are running a server that has the only piece of rezed ice on the board, which isn't a rare game state, they can't trigger Stegadon, so you know exactly what's going to happen. But equally, you shouldn't just give them free reses.
Yeah, it seems like you have to do a lot of planning ahead and really think your line out when you're running against this. And that's because it's extremely unfamiliar compared to if you have been practicing a lot or playing against a lot of the MBN decks. Yeah. It's a completely different problem set that you're being asked to solve, which, if you count it round through the tournament, is a bit of a shock.
It has shades of the Ob Stavka deck as well, in that you will runners are very good at breaking low-cost dice, and there are a lot of one or two strength ice in the game. It's a different challenge to be able to break effectively your seven or eight cost strength ice, and a lot of the way that runners against those other decks don't work against that line, and you have to kind of adjust if this is a seven or eight ice, or can I let it fly? And that's the key challenge, I think, against these Stegodon decks. You should be able to identify that a lot of the fires aren't actually that bad. You need to know when you can run and let an ice fire, and you absolutely can't. And if you can't, what's your...
That's a scary prospect. Then you've effectively got like strength five drafter looking to fire, but yeah.
But drafter is an architect, right? You can still run through it and rip points off R&D.
You can, yeah.
If there isn't a managarm in the discard pile, then running through a drafter isn't that bad a lot of the time. If they've got one in hand and then so be it. But they usually go on them. So that's a good example of sometimes you won't be able to break this draft and lose you the game if it fires. It's not very going to be that impactful if it fires.
Cool. Okay. I know Chris Fay tried a few games of this, and he felt like, from a piloting perspective, that he was playing it too aggressively, I think too rushy. And now he had to dial back and slow down a little bit, and he found the deck was working for him a bit then. Did you find that you have to be a bit slower than some of the acid decks you've played in the past?
I think you want to be super aggressive to get the Stegodon scored. Like, you want to score Stegodon turn two whenever possible. But once you... I don't know. I think you've got to adapt to the runner board state quite a lot. The flip of what we said earlier about runners extending, being careful, then winning, means that as Corp, you cannot get to that game state. You get the runner to overcommit. So I think you do have to be quite aggressive. And a lot of runners don't really want to run remotes at this point, especially if it's got in and they think they might be for the losing game. So you kind of have to play off that expectation.
Okay, interesting. Cool.
Can we talk about the one copy of Vovo Azeti in this deck?
Yeah.
Is it 2023 and Akatara Watanabe is good now? Is that what's happening?
Vovo is genuinely pretty good. I think it's going to be card like 48 to 51 ish in a lot of these decks, and it's really hard to play more than one. But you've got a lot of things that it saves you money on. Your econ is fairly tight to the ground already, and it does a couple of neat tricks like moving around servers fully operational. Get onto R&D. You've got your ice on the and that the econ bonus of always having him where you need him to be makes him quite a lot better. I think it's a pretty good card, but also I think...
My Justice for Akatara Watanabe shirts are always going to be relevant, so I've stapled my mask to a rotated card, which I really recommend doing.
You're wearing that. Chris is wearing his Wage Workers as the best card ever shirt, you know.
Awesome. I think the other deck we played was Chris... Chris F was on the rushy outfit deck, but I don't think he changed any cards from the list that came out of APAC, and he found it generally pretty consistent, I think, for the whole day. So probably not a lot to add there.
People definitely wanted to play Trojan Horse against me at the CO. That card. Yeah. I'm just going to say, didn't work, but, you know.
It's because the maths is completely impossible. No one has ever looked at a copy of Trojan Horse and known how much they have to spend to trash give an icebreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stego is a good card that makes you do maths every single turn, so can we just only play good maths cards, please?
Cool, so do you want to wrap up that bit there? Are we happy with our review of all the decks and generally our indecision over Corp came through?
Might be worth talking about Runner quickly. I'm not going to dwell on it too much, but because a lot of the runners are very similar, the Hashiko and the Sable decks both feel very strong to me. Also quite similar. They've just got a lot of draw, very solid, and they win off pressure. The Sable deck's got some ability to kind of fight the Corp on tempo. It has a lot of extra clicks. It gains a lot of stuff off those clicks. You have cards like Wheel, Tech Remotes. You probably have a little bit more room for tech cards if you want. But on the flip side, the Hashiko has a few more ways to trick its way into servers. You've got Bankar for early prep, got Botulus. But those decks are both really quite similar and quite just well-rounded runner decks. They don't have any weaknesses that are off. Alex went a bit rogue and played Freedom.
I always quite liked Freedom as a runner, to be honest, and I found him to be very awkward in the last meta. I kind of wanted to play him for Nats. but he's always just been so awkward against hard-hitting news. And to be honest, a big part of the reason I wanted to try Freedom again was because hard-hitting news rotated. And you can install a Yusuf and run on turn one and try and kill something and not just immediately lose the game. So that felt like it was worth it. I got a Freedom list from Whiteblade, who I'll also credit when I put up the write-up for this deck eventually, because I saw him playing it on JNet. I'm not a deck builder, so I asked him. It's a Hermes Freedom deck, so your MU is pretty awkward, so that's bad, but Hermes is really good, so that part is good. And what Freedom likes to do anyway is find a central to open, so Hermes is synergy with your game plan. Hermes is also synergy with Amakua, obviously, because Amakua likes open servers. Freedom wants Amakua anyway. So all these three cards are nice together. So like a Hermes Amakua. And you usually just find a central to bust open, also with Bankar, which Bankar is really good. I don't know if that all should return to, but Bankar's one of the best runner cards, maybe. So you've just got all these things that keep servers open. You don't have a lot of punishment for running at the moment. Oppo's a bit easier to... So I tweaked Whiteblade's list a bunch. Swabble suggested I put Wake Implant in because I had an influence spare and was playing Docklands. Wake Implant's really good as well. And so it's just pretty classic Freedom without Consume. You find a server to open, get a big Amakura combined with Leech. You run everything. You trash all their little tricks from hand. I don't like this deck that much, to be perfectly honest, but other people might want to play it, so I feel like I should talk about it. It's not terrible. Obviously, I won more games than I lost with it. I think runners are still really good. Freedom's still, with a bunch of the price and zero and steel skin scarring, he still kind of has problems with finding all these cards in time. There were games when I was digging for a particular card to get into a server, for example, when the court would be able to put two or three on R&D. So he just feels slow and awkward compared to Sable and Hashiko. And it's just a risk that you don't need to take in this meta when you're playing runner. I mean, it might be that we can refine Freedom with Earthrise Hotels or something. The ability to trash things from hand is still good, but there aren't a lot of corps winning off like Audacity and Biotic Labor and other powerful operations in the same way that there have been in other meta. So Freedom's just not quite as exciting as he was. I guess he is potentially good against assets. So if you're scared of the wrongy Doge NEH deck, it might be worth looking at because rubbishy little assets off the... but generally I found him to be a bit too slow, and you don't need to sacrifice power for economy in this, or the other way around. You just want to be consistent, and Freedom is not consistent. That's my diatribe on Freedom, but it's fun. I recommend trying it.
It's very similar to the other runner decks in a way. It's a Hermes deck. It has Amakua, and those are like the pillars that are holding up both Anarch and Krim.
Hermes and Bankar are like, yeah, incredible cards, both. I mean, every deck we had, every runner deck had Hermes, right? There wasn't anyone that wasn't. Yeah,
I think everyone's freaking out about Hermes, maybe rightfully so, but it still feels like Bankar might be a little bit underplayed, right? Aren't there some... There are still some high-performing Anarch lists that aren't slotting it, and
yeah,
I don't really understand.
It wasn't in the,
I feel like you're...
It wasn't in the APAC deck that... the Hashiko APAC I'm up with. I don't think it was in the APAC deck. The Cascadia winning. So... Not everyone is playing it. I personally think that's a mistake, but time will tell.
I agree. I think what we've been talking about as a runner, what you're looking for at the moment is weird sort of liabilities or ways you can randomly lose the game. You just not having the right breaker at the right time or not finding enough botuluses is one way. So Bankar is just, funnily enough, for a card that net damages you, it's actually like a safe card. Like it does provide you with a lot of safety. It lets you run with impunity. And it stops the court firing Rashidas, scoring important agendas, protecting a Sansan. Against the HB decks and the Ice Light NBN decks, you can just lean on Bankar for a lot of the game without having to install anything. It's an econ card, and it's in a constant inside job. Again, I may be wrong here too, but to me the card seems like an auto-include. I would almost consider playing it in Criminal.
It's very spicy, isn't it? Opting into net damage in Crim. It's a horrifying concept, but it is really good. It also synergizes really well with Hermes, right? Because half the time when someone Bankars just for an access on HQ, you're like, I don't even want to res this ice. It's a negative econ swing that is like not actually good for me. But if I leave this ice against Hermes, I've just lost everything. That's awful.
It is one of the pieces of glue holding my Freedom deck that I played together, to be honest. Because if you bounce one card with Hermes, you Bankar another one, then you can start getting a bunch of Amakua counters and you're back in the game. So it is part of that Amakua, Freedom, Hermes trifecta. So I guess it's a quadfecta, but you see what I mean.
Jake. All right, so if we're sort of wrapping it up there with a little runner analysis, and I think we should say we did have a lovely weekend in Nottingham outside of the CO. We did get to go and explore the city as it was a little bit. We got to do there's a lot of Warhammer going on the Friday.
We actively
we opted out of this episode.
Yeah.
That's true. But yeah, thanks for mentioning that. We'd have to say this episode sponsored by the Nottingham Tourist Board. Visit Nottingham, a fine city. City of caves, they call it.
City of dioramas.
Yeah, the dioramas, I think. Most dioramas have the caves in them, so...
Exactly. Dioramas are so cool, man. I don't want to spend too long talking on the podcast because it is a Netrunner podcast, but...
Not enough dioramas in Netrunner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Make a little Netrunner that I can look at. A man typing on a computer.
It's true. I mean, John, you went into all of this with basically no Warhammer engagement at all, right? And you're now a full convert. You've been dragged all the way through Warhammer World. You've seen all the sites.
I've seen it all. Yeah. I mean, the last time I played was obviously when I was a kid, and then stepping into the exhibition, they had a cabinet literally as you enter that was like, "This is where we started." And the stuff that I remembered was at the bottom of that cabinet, shockingly enough, which made me feel incredibly old. But it was really good fun for the whatever it was, 6-7 quid to go round and look, impressive, like super impressive. And I'm gonna go and buy myself a box of Tau at some point and start painting it up. So yeah. It's good. I loved it.
Yeah, a wonderful weekend. It was good because the weekend obviously started with it being, you know, a surprise party for Mike. All his friends were there. Very surprising. Mike. I had a similar experience at the tournament on Saturday when I was playing against John and I ran a remote and he rezzed an Overseer Matrix against me. I think I was more shocked than Mike to see all his friends than when I saw an Overseer Matrix. Genuinely, a big part of me was like, is this a proxy that John was playing that he's like forgotten to put a piece of paper in front of?
In my defense, I did assume that you already knew because we'd been testing all weekend. As the slot wasn't even that late notice, I don't think. It was one that Chris had made a few days before, but yeah, it was one of my favourite reactions from the day, I think, was there.
You're right. You're right, Alex. Matrix. Overseer Matrix is like a surprise party for a runner.
It is the opposite, though, isn't it? It's like a surprise party, but like it's the police and you are getting arrested.
Sting.
It's your racist family members who've turned up to your party and ruined it.
On Sunday morning, before we were going to leave, we were like told where Mike was having breakfast, so we went to join him and we went to Browns, which is like reasonably fancy place, and there were a lot of police cars parked outside, so we're like, okay, what's happening now?
it was a lovely weekend. It's very, very good. Thank you again to everyone in Nottingham. Thank you again to Matt for running. Thank you again to Mark as well, I believe, who arranged for delivery of all of those new cards, so we got to play with everything on the day without having to proxy too much. So that was brilliant. But I suppose we should look ahead now. We've had two thirds of the Continentals already, right? We've had APAC and Cascadia is out of the way. We've got Euros this weekend for the brave who are willing to spend their Saturday locked in front of their PC on JNet. If you were or if you are going to be looking at playing this weekend, what are you taking from the Cascadia results and where are you looking for your testing efforts?
Yeah, so I think you've got maybe two or two and a half emergent corps from Cascade. So you've got obviously the NEH that won. That's quite a different from the other NBN asset that we've seen, because it's very all in on kill. It's not trying to score any agendas, so that deck, there's a real question about how that deck handles both being a known deck that people have worked out how to play against and also how it will handle tech cards. But that deck is obviously conceptually strong, needs to be looked at a little bit. The ob deck that came second is conceptually strong. That's doing something as well that fits the meta quite well, in that it is being very aggressive, so too much to stop it, and it's also got a pile of ice that it can just stick on R&D to try and stop. So those two decks I think need to be looked at a little bit. It's possible we need to look at the traditional kind of Acer lists, which are still doing quite well. The ones that are just not trying to use wage workers or anything else, they're just playing Skunkworks and a defensive upgrade like Sayers. But if I was looking at a Corp, I would be putting all my effort into this to see how they sit the Corps.
Yep, agreed. And I think there's not really much to look at from Runner. Like, the Runners that were there are basically, I mean, apart from an Arasal list did better than I think any of us would have expected it, but the rest of the Runners there were basically sort of concordant with what we had played before. I probably am playing Euros. I think I'm, unless something wild happens, I think I'm just locked in for Sable because it seems good, and because I think it's a reasonable place to put tech for some of these matchups if you decide you do need tech for particularly the NEH. Corp side, I think I'm probably going to spend most of my time looking at this Orb list and just trying to figure out how resilient it actually is to the patterns we've talked about where you just suddenly lose on R&D. Like, if nothing else, scoring with Tucana is quite sort of pleasant against Hermes because they bounce a piece of ice of R&D and you just put another piece of ice in R&D. Like, that's kind of, that's a nice plan.
Yeah.
You do have to Tucana first though, right? If you're scoring,
yeah,
it's your trigger.
Yeah,
you do, but
it reses the ice.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
but
you're, no,
you don't just get to, you don't just get to respond. Yeah, so if you do that and then they bounce the remote ice, you're kind of annoyed.
Yeah. No, I also I'm hoping to play at least some of Euros, and I'm gonna test that Orb list a bit.
If everyone's moving onto NEH like decks, then I think Sable looks so many clicks per turn, like wheels, which is a bunch of stuff like bankroll and the tech cards you want. So if everyone's moving in the direction, I think Sable looks great. I don't think Ashiki Steve very far wrong either. It's won both mentals so far. It's put spending a lot of time on runner still seems like...
I think we're still kind of in the wild west of Corp deck matter, at least.
Yep.
There's a pretty wide spread of IDs both at Cascadia and at Nottingham, so I think Euros is going to be much of the same. I even think with this NEH list, it might be powerful. Testing will reveal that, but I don't think most people are going to suddenly jump onto it as well, because I think it's actually quite a tricky list to pilot in some ways. You can't just spam all your assets out and expect to win every single game. Sometimes it'll work out for you, but I do think you need to actually think about what your plan is, how you're going to stay ahead on credits for the SIU trace, things like that.
Yeah, the crucial thing about the NEH deck is that you're trying to construct a kill, you're not just trying to assemble a board state.
Yeah, not just tempo the runner out of the game, there's real combos. It also has a sort of, I think, a slightly less thought about aspect of how testable decks are in a short space of time, of it's a deck that is completely untestable with strangers, it's a deck that is completely untestable on Jaina, and you can't test it if you're both trying to just have a fun game of Netrunner. And this has often been true with Asset Spam, but you need your opponent to sit down and be I am willing to play a long, boring game of Netrunner that isn't in a tournament, but I'm going to pretend I'm playing as if I'm in a tournament, because otherwise, if you make suboptimal decisions, it's not reflecting tournament reality. And I think this is more true of this kind of asset deck than it is of some other archetypes, which sort of condense the game into fewer turns and fewer critical decisions.
Very few people at Euros are just going to press for concede button when they see you're playing NEH. Maybe one or two, but I think most of them are going to actually stick it out and try and win the game, whereas, Jaina Casual, no shade, but some people will just leave if they see you're playing an asset spam deck.
Yeah, I mean, even if I'm playing and I'm playing on my lunch break, I'm hardly I'm gonna put 55 minutes into dismantling this puzzle stage.
I would say that this is a great meta for not stressing too much about what you're playing. If you're a reasonably sound player and you are able to, you can just take a deep runner deck and a Corp that you like, and you will be behind even the secret testing groups who've got 200 hours of testing into the...
I kind of hated my Corp deck at the wind. I did win, so it doesn't make it. It wasn't like they were non-functional.
Yeah.
All the decks that you could reasonably play will play Netrunner. The runner decks can rip points, so even if you feel bummed, you can win. Your runner opponents are still making mistakes in this meta, so we'll play into whatever your weird surprise threat is. Tech decks, really think about your plays, particularly when it gets close, because it really is anybody's game, even when it feels like one player is too much. But yeah, I agree.
It feels like it feels like a great meta to us, play skill and job.
I've got me. I'm slightly keen to look at Soccer's latest Etia deck. It's a bit different from the stuff we've been testing recently, so sometimes the changes are quite refreshing, so I might have a glance at that, I think.
And that's the other thing. There must still be loads that are out there that haven't all shared or explored yet. And Jinteki feels like a completely unmined space, apart from Soccer's online crusade to publish Etia lists. But there's almost certainly good decks out there that, if you think you've got a good deck that is undiscovered.
I fully believe that it might be an Ag Infusion deck that doesn't lose on Centrals as easily as the other Corp decks, just because you can Resonancy.
Yeah, I've been wondering about this too. I don't think this is... I think this is worth exploring at least.
Cool. Well, sounds like a pretty good meta for just everyone to join in and have a bit of fun on this one. Then the pressure's off in that regard, with thinking, you know, I'm sitting down, I'm going to see a sea of tech against me. You can slide right in and have a bit of fun, which is always a good sign.
Not a meta that's chock full of tech. I mean, that's partly a result of it being unknown, but also a result the runners maybe don't need to play it. But I don't know. Although the Corp decks are awkward, it does make things a bit more positive that you're not that likely to have the runner install some pointless nonsense misery card that just shuts down your whole strategy. So take comfort in that.
Except for Hush, which, as far as we can tell, beats every single ice in the game at the moment.
Yeah, it's like a one-cost
That means it's
parasite.
Not a tech card. That means it's just secondary icebreaker. If Hush just does something against everything, that's not tech anymore. It's just good.
It's just a card, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think...
Wheels actually feel similar to me.
Yeah.
Like, Wheels, you can kind of look at it and be like, well, this is tag removal and anti-asset spam. But in that Sable deck, it's just efficiency a lot of the time. Just giving you a click every turn.
Not to get too down the rabbit hole as we're starting to wrap up, but pinhole threading is what the opposite now. It's tech against nothing. You can afford to cut it, so there's some slots.
And if you were going to spend them on tech, spend them on no free lunches.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Well, have we got anything else to cover? I don't think we have. I think we've efficiently blitzed through our little running list we had before we started in under an hour. Look at that. Cool.
No promises that will happen next. No, back
sure
to a 4-hour sprawling, meandering through everything.
I think there's probably time for Mike to rank his birthday guests from least favourite to favourite, and we'll still come in under an hour. So,
go for it, Mike.
Oh, that's too contentious. That's going on the Patreon that no one has access to.
Well, you heard it first. We'll get the Patreon up for you, so and then that'll come out as a special episode, along with Alex's Felivatex rants.
I'd like to spend 10 minutes talking about different card draw options for Sable. Which ones are the best? And sit down and just do all the maths on Earthrise versus Nuka versus Diesel. You know, really, really, just crack this one out.
Yeah, your digital life versus hedge fund is also another. Pointless hour-long episode.
I will say this about Nottingham. I played Your Digital Life for 3 credits. That did not feel good.
Brilliant. Cool. Well, on that note, we will leave you there with bated breath waiting for those new episodes to make their way into light of day, or not, as the case may be. But until next time, see you later, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.